Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
From 2400 Sports, Odyssey, and Major League Baseball, this is the PBP Voices of Baseball.
We bring you the people who bring you the game.
Hello, 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 and welcome in. Welcome back to the PBP Voices of Baseball. It is me, Matt Spiegel. Thrilled to be back here doing this with you. Tom McCarthy, the TV voice of the Philadelphia Phillies, is a wonderful guy. Really enjoyed talking with him, and we'll get to that interview in a moment. But I wanted to let you, the listeners, know where I've been, because it's been a couple of weeks. My father passed away. Herb Spiegel, at the age of 92, lived a wonderful life. Great, great guy. And certainly the best baseball fan I ever knew. So dealing with that and the fallout thereafter led me to pause on a few different work things, and such is life, right? So I am back now, and I appreciate the patience and some of you who have asked where I've been. And of course, I find myself thinking about him in everything that I do, certainly in all things baseball and really in all things play-by-play. I was remembering a moment when we were in the car, Herb Spiegel and I, in 1983, listening to the All-Star Game. And I had to look it up because I didn't remember the radio broadcasters. Brent Musburger, Duke Snider, and Brooks Robinson doing the Major League Baseball All-Star Game. And we arrived at my trumpet lesson, and I didn't want to go inside. And my dad let us sit there in the car for an extra 5 or 10 minutes and be late to the trumpet lesson so I could hear the baseball game. That's a lovely memory right there, and one of so many involving baseball and play-by-play, for that matter. Growing up, our house was filled with baseball, and a lot of it was the same reference points as Tom McCarthy, our guest upcoming, just because we happen to be growing up in Central Jersey around the same time. McCarthy grew up on the Mets and Bob Murphy. He grew up on the Yankees and Phil Rizzuto, and grew up on the Phillies and Harry Callis and guys like that. And so did I. So we'll get right to the conversation with Tom McCarthy as we are back at it. And we will be back at it on Thursday with the Spot Starter episode, including the return of the top five play-by-play calls of the week. Keep those suggestions coming at pbptop5@gmail.com, or you can tweet me at Matt Spiegs and keep the conversation going. Been a thrilling season, wonderful to do for you and with you, and we will keep it going. But right now, we start with Tom McCarthy of the Philadelphia Phillies, and I asked him, as I often ask people, where they are on the scale between entertainer and technician as a play-by-play broadcaster, or if for someone like Tom, the two elements have basically fused together by this point in his career.
I think they've kind of fused together at this point because, you know, I have so many different partners when it comes to the Phillies. And I do, and this is really the same for football, basketball, that I kind of adapt to whatever they're bringing to the table as a play-by-play guy, particularly with TV. You know, with TV, I always think the analyst is the star, and radio, to me, it's always the play-by-play guy is the star. So I always kind of defer to whoever's in the booth. And what I mean by that, and it's a roundabout way of getting to the answer, is that there's baseball and there's entertainment. And I have been fortunate enough to have John Kruk as a partner for the last several years, who's unbelievable. And he has morphed the two together of being an entertainer and a broadcaster. So because of that, through osmosis, I've kind of done the same thing. Now, I feel I have that same relationship with my other partners, but they're more baseball. And then we try to bring out sort of personable stuff into the telecast itself. So, you know, it takes time. I think more than anything, it's confidence in who you are. You know, I know that for me, anytime I put the headset on, anytime I have a microphone in front of me, I can improve. And there's certain things, even this week while I was in Miami, that I thought, all right, I got to do this a little bit better. I got to do that a little bit better. And as you get older, you have to adjust to that stuff also. But I think it's morphed into baseball and kind of entertainment. And depending on what your audience is on that given night, and we have a pretty large audience, some like it, you know, some are like, just go baseball. You know, we don't want any of this stuff that, you know, promoting the ballpark or promoting the food or anything like that.
Right. You know, it's an extra layer, of course. And as I've asked this question, I clearly have thought about it more from the entertainer's perspective, which is the analyst more than it is you, the play-by-play person. I get it. I love that you still think of yourself as being able to improve, while also, you said there in the answer, being confident in yourself and knowing who you are. That's a balance not everybody can figure out at first, or even in the long haul.
Yeah, I think having the confidence now, I understand that I have the confidence more so than I had 20 years ago. I had the confidence when I was a radio guy, but when I transitioned to television, it took me some time to kind of settle into being a totally different broadcaster. There are times I revert back to being a radio broadcaster while doing TV, and that happens with basketball a lot, because if I don't feel like I'm in total sync with the game, then sometimes if I do just pure play-by-play, even on television, it gets me back in sync with the game. So the confidence part of it, I think, has opened the door to my mind to understand, yeah, you're good, but you could be better.
Uh-huh.
That Schwarber home run, that was good, but how could it be better? That double play, how can you describe it even better without having the same stale sound every single time it goes out there?
What do you love about doing baseball games? You've referenced the other sports you've gotten to do, but what do you love about baseball?
I love the romance of it. I love the fact that sometimes it scripts itself and it's sort of out of your control and you just have to adapt to it. I played it my whole life. I played it into college. My older son played in college and now broadcasts the Mets games. My other son played professionally for 5 years and now works for Victus. So for me, baseball has been just ingrained in me since I was like 5 years old. So I love all the nuances about it. I love the change of the rules for me to adapt to it. I love the movement of the players, you know, just everything. I love a really good change up on the outside part of the plate. You know, I like the simplistic stuff of it. I like when a catcher, instead of on one knee, is in a normal stance and blocks the ball perfectly with chin to ball, things like that. I don't know. I just love everything about it. I love the sounds of it. I love the smells of it. I love the atmosphere of it. And I'm fortunate because at our ballpark, our fans are so amazing. I mean, we have 40,000 every single night. So the soundtrack it's just ingrained in you.
I was just at your park for the first time ever somehow. I mean, I grew up going to the Vet, you know, but like I was just at your place and it produces sound really well, doesn't
really
it? It's a remarkable sort of natural amphitheater and amplifier of sound. Do you agree from your travels all around?
No doubt. So we just left Miami, poor Miami. I apologize for saying this, but you have to generate your own sort of ambiance, and it's unfortunate. But at our place, you know, your chair, you're in your chair, but you're technically lifted up about that far the entire game. Like you're floating because of the sound that comes in and that you're surrounded by. It's amazing. And, you know, we don't take it lightly. You know, we had 10 lean years or 11 lean years and our attendance was dwindling, but still never dwindled on an average less than 20,000. So we still had it. It just wasn't, it was sort of in its genesis stage. Whereas now it's back to where it was in 07, 08, 09, 10, 11, you know, those type of years. And it's just,
yeah,
I'm telling you, you sit there on your chair and you're, and I'm really wired highly. Like the pace of my sound is a little more, it generates a little bit more than others, I think. So sometimes I have to back it off a little bit because I feel like it's, you know, I'm trying to rise to the crowd.
That's interesting. So that's a level of self-awareness, obviously. You think you bring a natural level of excitement that you might have to tone down every once in a while.
No doubt. I mean, I think sometimes, you know, I always say my pace is probably better for football and basketball because I'm sort of up all the time. And with baseball, it teaches me to kind of come down a little bit to then rise up. You know, I always tell young broadcasters, when you're broadcasting, don't start out at 75 miles an hour. You know, start out at 45 so you can get to 75 when the big call happens.
Yeah, there you go. Boog Shambi's a pal and always like talks to me about like, if I'm going to explode in the sixth inning for a 2-run homer that brings you within one,
right,
what do I have left later in the game?
Yeah. I learned that for me, sometimes at the start of the game, I feel like I'm all amped up and ready to go. And I noticed that this is part of what I noticed in Miami this week is that I have to bring it back a little bit. Because, you know, I'm here. Can I get here? But if I'm here, I can definitely get here with a little bit more, you know, pop to it when I'm broadcasting the game.
For the audio listeners on the podcast, the hands were raising on the natural.
Yeah.
No, you're good. We do videos so we can see each other and relate, which is going quite nicely. So I appreciate it. But it in a lot of ways, don't you think baseball broadcasting has caught up to your level of excitement? Like it's more natural around the league these days for it.
I think so, but I also don't want to. I'm a big fan of the Ernie Harwells, the Vin Scullys, the Harry Callises, the Bob Murphys. I actually think Bob, who used to do the Mets games, who I listened to growing up, and I feel like that's where my cadence is in some ways, is kind of like his. You know, whereas you grew up in Central Jersey, your cadence would probably be along the lines of Harry to a certain extent, you know, maybe, or even, you know, guys like that. My cadence was more like Bob's, where it was a little higher, like a little faster.
Sure.
And a little more energetic in some ways. And I feel like I want to still be like that, but I understand the game has changed. But I still, there's a line that I don't want to cross. You know, I love, you know, Ernie Harwell was a good friend of mine and Vin Scully. I mean, those guys were mentors that I leaned on to see how they did the game. And Harry was the same way.
Wow. I think we have probably exactly the same touchstones around the same age. Cause I heard Harry Callis on 1210 WCIU,
yeah.
but also Bob Murphy. And we used to talk about how, you know, and Murph's pace and patter was a very different thing. You as the Phillies and a Mets guy, cause you did both. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a pretty small group. That's McCarver. That's what, Todd Callis, I think. Are
Todd
you the
Callis
only three?
A couple years. Yeah. Yeah. Todd Callis. I think my son, because he filled in, you know, with the Phillies before he went to the Mets.
Amazing.
Smaller level, obviously. Yeah. So that I grew up a Mets fan and that's where I learned the game, but where I grew up in Jersey, you know, you grew up on the western part in Central Jersey. I grew up in the eastern part in Central Jersey. So I was fortunate that I got Yankee games, Mets games, and Phillies games. And my dad would take us to all three consistently every year. We'd go to like three Phillies games. I'd go to like 10 Mets games. And I'd go to a few Yankee games because my older brother was a Yankee fan. And my mom and dad were Yankee fans too. So, but from a broadcasting standpoint, I would get the Yankees with Bill White, Frank Messer, and Phil Rizzuto, and then eventually Tom Seaver and Phil Rizzuto, which was an unbelievable combination. And I've obviously get the Mets games with Bob Murphy and early on with Lindsey Nelson and Ralph Kiner and Bob Murphy. And then Gary, who I consider a dear friend, but I also, you know, he hates to hear this, but I, you know, I grew up listening to him and there's probably a little of him in me too. And then of course, Harry and Whitey and Andy Musser and Chris Wheeler and those guys with the Phillies. So I was really fortunate because baseball was on in our house or on the radio all the time. When I went to college at what's now the College of New Jersey, the Bob Murphy had been removed from TV and put on radio. And I was mad as a fan. But then when I got to Trenton State, I listened to the radio more and I realized, wow, what a gift that they moved him from TV to radio because he's so good.
Yeah.
And even there, I would listen to all the games. And for me, I was fortunate because at that point, I didn't know I was going to do this. But in my mind, I thought, man, that'd be really cool to do this.
You're also hearkening back to an era. I've had to remind people sometimes just how good McCarver was. How important he was in terms of elevating the form from an intelligence perspective.
Yeah, no doubt. I was fortunate enough to do several games with him on national TV, including the 2008 Phillies regular season clincher. So his versatility, first as a player, but also as a person, but as a broadcaster, it's hard to match it. Dwayne Kuiper and Mike Kruko, I think, have matched it, the ability to do play-by-play and be the analyst at the same time, whereas McCarver could do that also. So in 2008, the Phillies are playing the Nationals, and he and I are doing a game on television on Fox. And I hadn't done much TV at this point, but Fox said that in the ninth inning, if the Phillies are clinching, Tom, we're going to send you down to the clubhouse.
Wow.
And Tim will do the play-by-play. And I'm like, okay. But I really wanted to do the final out of a clinching game because I hadn't done it since the minor leagues. But he was great.
Ground ball up the middle. Great play. Rollins, Utley. The Philadelphia Phillies are the National League Division champions of the East for the second straight year on a brilliant play by Jimmy Rollins.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Wow.
And then I got to do the interviews, which from a business standpoint, that was smart. Even though everybody knew who Tim was in the Phillies clubhouse, I had this relationship with these guys that, you know, I've been with them since 2000, really 2000, September of 2000. So, but
amazing.
I got to do I cherish that I was able to do a game with him, you know, do a couple games with him because he was so nurturing, but it was such a good partner.
Unbelievable. All right, real quick, because you made me look it up. I was thinking Mets and Phillies. Three players have played 300 games for each team. Only three guys. You know them? I bet you got them.
So Tug, I would think, is one.
Tug is one. Tug McGraw is one.
Lenny Dykstra is the other.
Yes.
I don't know if Juan Samuel played enough games with the Mets. I know he played enough games with the Phillies.
Yeah.
The third.
A contemporary of Dykstra's, teammate of Dykstra's.
Roger McDowell?
No, good guess. Greg Jeffries.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, it's funny because that Phillies signed Jeffries and Crucker left the Phillies at that point because they didn't really need him. They didn't need a first baseman. Wow, interesting.
But you got me thinking because, I mean, that's an incredible rivalry and you've been a part of incredible moments with it. I found myself thinking about 2015. I know there was I know Harvey hit Chase Utley, right?
And was it Harvey or was it Thor?
Oh, might have been Syndergaard. There's a Larry Boa fight mixed in there as well.
Is. Yo, that was right. That was with Daniel Murphy. Oh man.
Sit down, Jeff. Sit down.
Oh, now we've got Jeff Francoeur popping out of the dugout. Dan Bellino says, "Sit down." The Mets come clamoring toward Hanzo Robles. Hernandez pops out. So does Boa, who's just been ejected from the game. And Larry Boa is not happy with Dan Bellino. Oh, Boa. We haven't seen Boa this hot since back in 2004. Yeah, Larry's not ready to go just yet.
I talk about this all the time. So Larry and I, when I first started, when he was the manager of the Phillies, we did a talk show every week at a local car dealer because it was the manager's show. And it was awesome. And I've gotten to be friendly with him. Obviously, he's a really good friend of mine now. But, man, when he's in the dugout, it's theater. And at that point, he was back as the bench coach. He wasn't even the manager. And he's like going back with Murphy. Yeah, that that's interesting because obviously everybody knows in Philadelphia that I grew up a Mets fan, but I've been with the Phillies for 23 years. And, you know, I had a chance to come back and I was really happy in New York doing radio, but the TV opportunity was just too much for me to pass up. Quite frankly, you know, the organization was too much for me to pass up. As much as I liked working for the Mets, the Phillies were like a family to me. And, you know, that it's funny because there are still Phillies fans that think I'm a Mets fan, even though after 23 years of calling their games, you know, I am, you know, my blood was red before, but it's even deeper red now. So
I always think of the, there's a great documentary on the band Metallica, and the bass player at that point was the new guy. He'd only been in the band for 21 years, but
exactly. Yeah. So, you know, I read something the other day, and I'm always entertained on social media, obviously. But I read something the other day where somebody said, yeah, he has 1 foot out the door. He's not really a Phillies guy. And I'm like, been there for 23 years. I've been doing the NFL for all of those years. Yeah. I don't know. It's very funny though.
It really is. All right. All right. So we talked about the ballpark as a natural amplifier, and you gave that great visual of the chair being about 6 to 8 inches off the ground.
Yeah.
So just, you know, free consciousness here. When I ask you to think of a moment, a play, a walk-off homer or something where you felt elevated off the ground in that ballpark and you were on the mic, what comes to mind?
Bryce Harper had a grand slam in extra innings against the Chicago Cubs. And it was, I mean, we weren't very good at the time, but I still remember that because, man, everybody was into it.
Two with the bases loaded and one out.
Harper, oh, my God.
Deep to right field. Way up there and way out of here. Second deck walk-off home run. Grand slam, Bryce Harper. Wow. The Phillies have come from behind to win it 7-5.
It was we needed a defining moment. And in Bryce Harper's establishment as a Philadelphia Philly. And that was it. Lefty on lefty. I think it was Harrison that was pitching for the Cubs. And it was unbelievable. And it was one of those calls. It was a no doubt about it home run. And that was pretty incredible. There are so many other little ones that I remember, you know, during the Howard Rollins era and the Utley era. You know,
feel
those,
free. Go ahead. Give me something that pops up. Whatever.
Well, I mean, gosh, there's so many of them. It's hard to take one. I will say I called some of the innings, but I wasn't on the mic when Halladay threw the no-hitter against the Reds in the postseason. I mean, that was unbelievable. And when Victorino hit a grand slam against the Brewers after Brett Myers had this unbelievable at-bat against CC Sabathia when pitchers hit.
Oh,
that was a postseason game. You can name any postseason game and it'll lift you up. I mean, it's, you know, that's incredible.
You did a few, right? Or did you do some innings? Or what's the split with Scott Fransky, who's been on the pod?
So I'm fortunate that, you know, there's not many TV guys that get invited over to radio, particularly nowadays when we don't really do any radio. I'm fortunate that the Phillies allow me to do either two or three innings, depending on what the year is. It's two now, which I'm very comfortable with because, you know, Scott does every inning of every game pretty much. He takes some days off. And I'm just grateful for our friendship and for the Phillies that they allow me to even slide over for two. Now, they go by very quickly, and I'm very envious of radio guys now because it was one of the reasons why I never wanted to do TV because I wanted to be on the call at the end of the game when a team won a World Series. And I probably will never have that, but I'm okay with it at this point in my life because I have so many other things. But just being a part of it is really incredible to me. I don't take it for granted. I mean, I'm very humbled by the chance to get in and do a couple of innings.
Yeah, it's a huge topic for three seasons now of this podcast. And Len Casper is a good friend. He left the Cubs for White Sox radio in part so he could live the Ernie Harwell dream. That was his guy, you know, of having that kind of moment.
Yeah, and I know, and I had to reconcile that when I moved back over to TV. But there's obviously a lot of good being the voice of the team and having so many eyeballs on the games, because our ratings are through the roof, and you know it's yeah. a credit to everybody around us.
What was your Harwell? What was your Ernie Harwell connection? And
okay, so this
and
is really
friendship.
Cool.
I love
so
it.
This is really cool. I actually had hair at this time, which was really good. So back when I was first starting out, I was working for the Trenton Thunder as at that point, I guess I was the vice president and also their broadcaster. And I was, you know, I hadn't started working for Westwood One at the time. And Jim Hunter, who's the longtime voice of the Orioles, was the voice of what was CBS Radio. And he invited me up to Toronto for a game that he and Ernie were doing. And my brother and I went up. It was a Yankee game, and my brother was a Yankee fan. We stayed at the hotel at the stadium, and I did stats for them. And that's where I became friendly with Ernie Harwell. And wow. he actually taught me. When I did Princeton football, there were no monitors. There were no stat monitors. So I was my own stat guy with my partner, Walt Percy. And Ernie taught me on a yellow legal pad how to keep stats, running stats while doing play-by-play. And I used it that next season, and I used it forever while I was doing Princeton football. And I remember the day when I moved over to Rutgers, when they said, "Hey, you got a stat guy." I'm like, "And you could bring a spotter." I'm like, "Really?" And yeah, but I still used that legal pad with games that I did on Westwood One and stuff like that. So he and I became friends when I eventually made it to the big leagues. It's so cool when people are happy for you. He was beyond elated for me because he had heard my tapes. He said, "Hey man, you're pretty good. You got to really do this. You got to keep going after this." So that was my connection with him. And we were friendly up until he passed.
So you've got to be the only broadcaster ever to catch a home run while live on the air. I was looking it up. Yeah. Harry Carey almost caught a Dick Allen home run in 1972. Oh,
That would have hurt. I mean, yeah, that would hurt.
Because Harry used to broadcast from the bleachers for Sox yep. games for years, part of a remarkable attendance jump for the White Sox in those years that Harry got a lot of money for. He had attendance clauses that he hit in his contract, which is fun.
That's a smart man.
Yeah, right. That's a very smart man right there. But you caught a Freddie Freeman home run and didn't seem to break stride. How is it possible?
You know, it's funny, you know, our producer at the time, Jeff Hallickman, he had always wanted to get into the stands, and I'm open to anything. I really am. And he said, "This is where we're going to go for this game." And it was out in sort of left center field. We have at our ballpark, if anybody wants to look at a picture of it, you can see it's called Monty's Angle. It's after David Montgomery, who helped design the ballpark, one of our owners. And we were just to the left of that. And I went out there during the week just to gauge, you know, batting practice to see if I can read pitches and stuff like that. And there wasn't one ball hit out to us. And our producer really wanted a ball hit out to us. And he wanted Matt Stairs or Jamie Moyer, or I guess me, to catch it. So I always, at that time, carried a bucket of balls and my first baseman's mitt, which, you know, I bought when I was in eighth grade. I carried that with me in my truck all the time because my son Tommy, who played professionally, I never knew when a round of batting practice would break out. So Matt Stairs was doing a hit before the game with our bullpen catcher, Bob Stumpo, and he needed a glove. Matt goes, "Man, I haven't owned a glove in like 10 years because he was a DH for so long and a pinch hitter." So I said, "Well, I have one." So I brought it out. So they did this piece. The glove is literally sitting next to me on the table. And we're in the first inning, and Freddie Freeman is up, and he crushes this ball. And I'm looking at it like, this is coming right at us.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
That one smoked deep to center field, out toward our vantage point.
Tom gets it!
Yes! Not good that he hit a home run, but I was able to catch it.
Hold on.
We got to throw it back.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I really want. Wasn't really that good of a throw. Well,
we make sure we know that we weren't cheering because of the home run.
We're
cheering because you just made a great catch.
Yeah, you don't use one hand, though, Tom.
It was pretty awesome. I think our producer was going to cry because it was everything he wanted it to be. And I felt really good that I was able to gift that to him. But I was really thankful I caught the ball because I would never have lived it down that if I missed that ball. And then people, you know, will make fun of me because I had a glove. I'm like, guys, this thing's going over 100 miles an hour. If I try to barehand it, my hand is shattered or my face is shattered.
Right.
I said, so I'm going to take the hit and use the glove because I'm smarter than the average bear when it comes to that. And I don't know. It was just a reaction. It was probably the most athletic thing I had done since college.
Amazing.
There was a guy three rows in front of me and goes, I just never saw you as an athlete. I can't believe you caught that ball. I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm out here watching a game. I mean, I guess there's athleticism, but the only thing is I was worried that I couldn't see it properly.
I was more impressed with the broadcast composure. It was a lean over and a catch.
That's just luck, man. That's just luck. I mean, I just, you know, but it. I will say I'm really thankful that I did call it that way. Because for me, you know, that the fact I caught it will go down for me personally, but the fact that I called it, I mean, Freddie and I talk about it still to this day. Kyle Kendrick and I talk about it. Ben Revere, who was in center field, I threw the ball back. I have nothing left in my rotator cuff. He was in the ballpark 2 weeks ago, and we talked about it. Like, it's so cool. You know,
oh, that's so cool.
Moment.
You didn't want to throw it back, and I understand
I
that.
I did not. I got it back, though. I did get it back.
Good. Good. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Cause I mean, that it's amazing that that's a Wrigley tradition of throwing back the opposing home run, but how many places do it? You travel all around the league, of course.
It's a good question. We do it now. Our fans do it all the time. I mean, I think more do it than don't do it nowadays. I really do. Although I thought about it when we were in Pittsburgh, nobody did it, you know, it was weird. It was
interesting.
Then I have to think back, maybe we didn't hit a home run, but there's some places. There's places that don't do it. Like, we were in Miami on our most recent road trip, and obviously there's not a lot of fans there, but man, Schwarber hit one and Stott hit one, and they weren't throwing it back.
Yeah, no, what people do at Wrigley is they'll bring an old, crappy baseball so they can
smart
keep the
people.
New one. Yeah.
That's smart people. It's like that's people evolution at, right there.
It's like people at hockey games will bring crappy hats just in case there's a hat trick. Yeah. And I got to throw it out there. I wanted to ask if there's a specific item that you like to always have with you in the baseball broadcast booth. Could be a good luck charm or a talisman or anything that has to be there.
Boy, that's a really good question. I think in the minor leagues, Andy Freed, who does the Rays games, he and I were partners in Trenton. We used to have an hourglass. I think it was me and Andy that had it, an hourglass that we always have, but I don't have that anymore.
Mm-hmm. The hourglass. I was given the hourglass by my agent, a baseball devotee, because you're supposed to give the score when the hourglass runs out, right?
Yeah, I don't have that anymore on TV because the score's up there all the time.
How about keeping score? How do you keep score? Has that changed now?
Yeah, that's changed. I mean, it's funny because one of our coaches was with me in Trenton when I was with the Thunder, and he randomly asked me the other day, "Because you remember that week I had in Binghamton where I was really good for like." I tore them up against Joe Croft. I'm like, well, I can go back and look because I have all my scorebooks from Trenton. So now I started scoring on an iPad about 10 years ago, 11 years ago, just on an Excel sheet. And I all of a sudden started coming down with carpal tunnel syndrome. I don't know how. So I stopped doing that and I went back to my own score sheet. And now I'm back to scoring on my iPad. So we have everything automated thanks to Kevin Franzen, who does the Nationals games. He and I have had this idea for years. And I had a stat guy up in Toronto. His name's George. And I can't remember George's last name. But he had a way to automate score sheets. Like when somebody did something, he'd write it in and it would update the stats. And I was so enamored by it, but I couldn't figure out how to do it. And Kevin Franzen's come up with this. He's an Excel savant.
Wow.
He's come up with this formula where he takes my score sheet or Scott Fransky's score sheet or Ryan's. Well, Ryan uses my score sheet, but Kevin has automated it for him with some of the tendencies that he likes. And that's how I keep score now. It's remarkable. I have everything. I don't have anything in front of me except for my iPad, because I have tabs open up top of notes, my notes, MLB research notes, you know, StatCast stuff, all these things.
What do you do your notes on? Microsoft OneNote or no?
It's GoodNotes.
Okay.
GoodNotes. So Microsoft OneNote for me with an Apple product never really worked.
Me too.
I'm sure it does now, but GoodNotes, if anybody ever keeps score on an iPad, GoodNotes is outstanding.
Really cool. Yeah, this
it takes a little time to learn to navigate it, but mm-hmm. it's outstanding. I had never heard of it until this year. Franzen actually said it to me. And my daughter, who's in college, uses it for notes. And she goes, "Yeah, yeah, remember you signed me up for it." I was like, I don't remember that. But anyway, that's how I keep score now, is on an iPad.
What's one part of your game prep that you can't ignore? Like, I have to do this before every single game or else I feel a little naked when the game starts.
Pitcher notes, like starting pitcher notes and relief pitcher notes. I have to, because if I don't know what the guy throws coming out of the bullpen, I'm really lost, because I have to have an ability to talk about what he's throwing when he comes in, how he is against left-handers, how he is against right-handers. But I also think starting pitchers, I think sometimes we get so enamored with the everyday players that we forget to tell the story of the starting pitcher. So that stuff is really important to me. I mean, that's the first thing I go to in the morning when preparing for. Actually, the first thing I go to is getting a synopsis on what happened in the National League East. Then I go to the pitcher stuff. I have to do that. I've done that every day, pretty much since I was in the minor leagues with the Eastern League. You know, whoever, if I needed to know what Binghamton and Redding and Bowie and, you know, Portland, what those guys did before I ventured out to anything else.
That's awesome. Dave Raymond was on the pod a few weeks ago, the Rangers voice, mm-hmm. and he summarized part of the job as hanging around and chatting. And that's like, there's a lot of that, isn't there? Like, whether you're talking to other broadcasters or clubhouses, you're learning stuff, right?
Yeah, there is. You know, I have found it was a lot easier when I first got started. I don't know why, and it could be an age thing. I mean, I'm 57 now. When I started, I was 32 in the big leagues. In the minor leagues, I was 25, so I was the same age as a lot of those guys in Double A. But you have to be there when the clubhouse opens. You have to be there for the manager talking. I would like to do more of the other manager interviews, but we don't always know those times, and that's probably laziness on my part. But I think that it's important to be around, to talk to players, to let them, to show your face. In fact, that's another thing that I tried to do a little bit more of in Miami in our most recent road trip, is hang around the cage a little bit more, because I didn't feel like I was doing that enough. Hmm. But I think that's really important, to just chit chat with guys in their most relaxed piece of environment.
Last couple of minutes here with Tom McCarthy. This is so fun. I appreciate it. Wondering if there's a moment you observed with your unique access when you realized why a great player was truly great. You're like, oh man, that's why that guy is so good. You've seen a lot of great ones.
Well, I think it's, I always think it's spring training in the early morning when you arrive at 7 a.m. and the best fielder is out on a small field taking ground balls. And to me, you know, I get up early. These guys don't generally do it. But I see the work that they put in, whether it be Jimmy Rollins or Trey Turner now, Freddie Galvis before, David Wright when I was at the Mets. You know, these little backfields where they're dripping with sweat and just trying to improve with each passing day. That to me is when I'm like, okay, these guys, I mean, they care. It's not just, we're going to put the uniform on, we're going to get out there. And then offensively is, I think now the guy that I'm mesmerized by is Kyle Schwarber, because I get there pretty early and you can hear the crack of the bat and the ball hitting the bat. And then you see him kind of sauntering out of the cage. I mean, he's there all the time to try to get his swing to where it needs to be. The work that he's putting in prior to the game has made him more than just a home run hitter when the game gets underway. So that to me, I think that's, sometimes you lose sight of that. You know, we probably don't talk about that enough, about the work they put in, because people might poo-poo it. Well, yeah, they're getting paid millions of dollars. They should do it. Right. But there's guys that get paid millions of dollars that don't do it. So there's guys that do it. And that to me is pretty cool to watch that.
There was an article a few weeks ago, I think it was Matt Gelb in The Athletic, about Kyle's work against lefties.
Like, it's unbelievable.
Somebody gave him the idea, prepare to die. And it was some player, he didn't even remember who, against Randy Johnson.
Yep.
But now he goes in there with that mindset, and he now dominates lefties as a lefty hitter. And he never was that guy. Never.
Yeah, an OPS of over one, and it's consistently been that way the whole year. It's incredible. You know, home runs, I think he's got 10 home runs against lefties. He has 7 against relievers. I mean, think about that. 7 against reliever, lefty wow. relievers.
Wow.
That people in the National League have gotten lefties for their bullpen for the Philadelphia Phillies since Ryan Howard. You know what I mean? So the fact that they're still doing that, but now it's, you know, he's countering that. That's pretty darn good.
And want to ask you, Tom, for the best piece of advice that you've gotten that you'd like to pass on. I'd like to ask for it in two parts. One mechanically about doing the gig mm-hmm. of baseball play-by-play, and then the other would just be in terms of an overall career philosophy or anything like that.
So I'll do the mechanics of the game first. The most important thing, I think, for people is to just be you. It is really hard to even be you in this business. When you try to be somebody else, you have made things 100 times harder. And Harry Callis told me when I came back to do TV, because the objective was I was coming back to eventually replace him. And I am totally different than Harry is. Maybe not in prep, but in game management. And nobody can make the big call better than Harry. And he said to me, I mean, he was one of the first people that called me when I came back. He wanted me to come back. He said to me, he goes, you need to be yourself. You do not need to be me. And if you do that, then you'll be fine. The piece of advice from a career standpoint, I'm going to go all the way back to the time when I was in Trenton. I had an opportunity to leave broadcasting, and I accepted the job to be the general manager of the Lakewood Blue Claws. I would have had to give up all broadcasting.
Wow.
And I had a boss that I took over for. His name's Brian Mahoney, who eventually came to the Phillies as a salesperson. But he was my boss along with Wayne Hodes. And his dad, Kevin, his dad, Neil Mahoney, I know there's a lot of names, used to run the Red Sox. He signed Jim Rice. He was Ted Williams' buddy. He had all these players that he brought in. He was sitting outside the ballpark one day in Trenton, and there's a bench out there that's next to a statue of one of our owners, Sam Flamery. And he said to me, because I wasn't sure if I could do this, and he said to me, he said, Tom, I've been around a lot of people in my life in baseball. He said, you can do this. He said, you need to do this, and you need to make this a priority for your career. Because a lot of people at that point didn't know if I was an administrator or a broadcaster. And he basically said, you need to take a chance on you that this will happen. And then if it doesn't happen, you can always figure the other stuff out. You know, I'm a big believer that we are given a canvas for our life. And you can throw whatever color you want on that canvas, but you could also take it off and start over again. So do what you want, not what you have to do. And I think you'll find happiness no matter what it is.
That's wonderful stuff. Tom, thank you so much. What a pleasure.
Yeah, same here, buddy. Thank you.
There he is, Tom McCarthy of the Philadelphia Phillies. What a wonderful dude. Enjoyed that conversation so, so much. My producer is Robbie Triano. Great job, Tree. Our producer emeritus is Ryan Porth, so we can still ask him to do stuff. Been a while. Might have to drop him from the credits. Don't tell him, Robbie. My collaborator is James Vickery. The music for the podcast comes from Kurt Morrison of Tributosaurus. This is an Odyssey podcast. Find us on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcast, and on our YouTube page where you can see the PBP Top 5. We'll do that Thursday on the Spot Starter episode. Remember, if you see a call you like, radio, TV, or otherwise, find me on Twitter at Matt Spiegs, S-P-I-E-G-S, or you can email us, pbptop5@gmail.com. The PBP, Voices of Baseball. We bring you the people that bring you the game.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.